Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. This hour, we're going to be talking about the breakdown of civility in our political culture, how we got here, and what we can do about it. That coming up a little bit later in the hour, but first we want to address, and as our state and our nation mourns, the death of former Iowa Governor Robert D. Ray, dying on Sunday morning at a nursing home in Des Moines. According to his former chief of staff, David Ullman, Ray had been battling Parkinson's disease for several years. Former Governor Ray dying at the age of 89 on Sunday morning, the 38th governor of Iowa from January of 1969 to January of 1983. Here's a little clip of our former governor from 2011 in an interview with IPR.
We learn from each other, and we're not isolated. We're not just a little pinpoint. We're part of the world, and we should be a leader.
You can share your memories, your thoughts at the passing of Governor Robert Ray, 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org is our email. Several people with us today to share initially their thoughts on the passing of Governor Ray. Jim Lightfoot is with us, former Republican U.S. Congressman representing Iowa's 5th District from 85 into 93. Then it became the 3rd District from 93 to 97. Congressman Lightfoot, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Congressman Dave Nagel with us as well, former U.S. Democratic Congressman representing Iowa's 3rd Congressional District from 1987 to 93. Congressman Nagel, welcome to you.
Good to be with you again, Jim. Good to hear your voice.
Mary Kramer is with us, a former Republican Iowa State Senator from 1990 to 2003, also on IPR's Board of Directors and former State Senate President. Mary Kramer, always great to have you on the program. Mary, are you there? Well, we'll try to take care of that. Mary not joining us by phone quite yet. Dean Borg is with us in the Iowa City studio. I know he's there because he's sitting right across from me. Hi, Dean. Let's have your ideas, your thoughts about Bob Ray. We heard a little bit of his voice. May I start with you, Dean? You are been covering Iowa politics for many decades. What will you remember most about Bob Ray?
I think you can hear it in the voice, the clip you just played. Just a really soft-spoken.
We'll have to get you to a different mic. Perhaps when you're not quite on this mic, let's try you on a different mic, Dean.
We'll move this one over and see if that one works.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, or we can share a mic. Oh, there you are. There you're on
right.
It. You're fine.
All right. Well, I was going to say, just a really leader who was a gentleman. Mm-hmm. He led effectively but gently. He led by being conciliatory and willing to listen to other people, but he had strong feelings, and he led effectively but listened to other people.
Mm-hmm. And he was known for his bipartisanship, at least in his leadership,
yes.
in even though he was a Republican,
yes.
Wrangling compromises. How was that possible?
I think that Governor Ray thought that his biggest accomplishment as governor was the enactment of the 5-cent deposit bottle bill.
Mm-hmm.
And that was very contentious. The really strong special interests who did not want that enacted, and there was a lot of money spent to try to defeat it in the Iowa legislature. Governor Ray persisted. But I would differ with Governor Ray and his evaluation, and I mean, that's a great accomplishment for the environment. But where I saw his effectiveness, and I would like to hear Congressman Lightfoot and Nagel and Ambassador Kramer also comment on this, but I covered the legislature in residence when the legislation was being crafted with a very strong Democratic presence in the legislature and not always controlled by Republicans. But that's when the collective bargaining bill for public employees was crafted. Now, if you don't think that was an accomplishment under the Republican leadership of the legislature and the governor's office at that time, it really was. And it was a landmark achievement for Governor Ray.
Let's go to our Congressman Jim Lightfoot. Congressman Lightfoot, tell us about your thoughts at this time as we mourn the passing of Governor Ray.
Well, I would like to agree with Dean's comments. He wrapped it up pretty well. He was a gentleman. He was smart. He knew how to connect with people. And I had covered him when I worked for KMA Radio. And then when I got into the political arena, Governor Branstad was in place at that point in time. But he helped me with a couple of fundraisers and some pretty sage advice from time to time. And probably the best thing that I heard from him was leave politics out of the decision-making process.
Right.
And I think that's why he was so successful with what Dean was just talking about, very controversial issues that were able to get a positive outcome.
Right, and this was a mantra of his to his staff, and here's a quote, Governor Ray telling the Associated Press during an interview in 2011. Here are his words. I used to tell the staff whenever we would talk about something like that, that you don't start talking about politics at all. Let's just decide what the right thing to do is, and then we'll decide how to promote it. An amazing quote, especially given our times now, Congressman Lightfoot.
Yeah, that's unfortunately something that we've lost in our discussion today about civility. You can disagree but not be disagreeable, and we've gotten away from that a long way, and we'll talk about that later. But as far as Governor Ray was concerned, he had the ability to reach out to both sides and make things work, and that's what government's supposed to be about, the way I understand it, the way I was taught in school, that, you know, both parties are to come together. And you can argue like the Dickens, but stay with the issue and don't get on to the personal types things that we're here going on today.
Congressman Nagel, I understand you were Democratic Party chair the last year that Governor Ray was in office in 82.
Yeah, that's right. I was 10 years old.
You haven't changed a nickel.
Yeah, I'm only 45. Ooh. Yes, that's well, ticket.
Congressman, what will you remember most about working with Governor Ray, or what thoughts should we hold as we mourn his passing?
Yeah, in all honesty, I didn't have that much, of course, of interaction with the governor. But I do remember several incidents, but one particularly, that the legislature had passed a bill, I think it was called, it should have been called the Landlord's Relief Act. It would have imposed some severe restrictions on rights of people who rent. And I called the governor's staff up, and I said, I'd really like the governor to look at this, and I think it's an overreach. And, you know, and I'll tell you, you know, if you need something someday, don't hesitate to call me because I'll remember this. And I don't know if it was because of my phone call. I doubt it. But the governor vetoed the legislation because it was an overreach. And that's that more than anything else, I think, to me, defined Bob Ray. He had the capacity, as others have mentioned, without political ideology interfering, he had the capacity to see both sides of the equation. He could listen to arguments for and against a particular piece. He would do it without anger. He would do it with thoughtfulness. And then he'd make the best decision because he was a decisive man. He'd make the best decision he could. And then you'd move on to the next one. And there was never any bitterness back behind that, whether you agreed or disagreed with him. And I respected that. The other thing I don't think is mentioned is that I was speaking with David Ullman, who was his the longtime chief of staff this morning. And David said the one thing about Bob Ray was he was also a mentor. David said he was 22 years old when he started with the governor. And he said he shaped you in terms of how to conduct yourself both in public office and as an individual. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a legacy in Iowa politics and in civics and in business of that Bob Ray standard that transfers itself just from simply the people who worked with him to the people they interacted with, including Democrats.
Well, Dave,
so we lost a great one.
Dave, you know, he shared something with you in that he was state Republican Party chair before you took over the Democratic Party, but he was state chair and led in rebuilding that party after the Democratic sweep in the mid-1960s.
Yes, that's correct. I'd forgotten that. Yeah, thank you. That's a good point. And the irony of it is, of course, and never governor, but we kept in '82. We did capture control of both houses of the legislature, and we were coming off the Reagan Revolution. So there was a parallel with our careers there that I hadn't thought of until you mentioned that.
Mm-hmm. Mary Kramer, Ambassador Mary Kramer, is now connected, and just at the right time, we got our telephone problems cleared up. Mary Kramer, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Now,
glad to be here.
We mentioned just a moment ago his mentorship, and I understand you considered Governor Ray a mentor of yours.
I certainly did. In 1990, when people came to recruit me to run for office, I was then a senior officer with Blue Cross and Blue Shield, and Governor Ray was the boss. And so they came to the door, invited me to run, and I said no. I had a full-time job. And they said, well, we're going to go see Governor Ray this afternoon and try to convince him. And I decided if anybody's going to see Governor Ray, probably I should go with them. You know, that's a good wisdom for the boss, I think. And so we went to his home that very afternoon, and he clearly thought it was a good idea. And so he began to share both the good and the bad about politics. But the things that stuck with me the most were, if you do it, it's going to be public service. Don't think of it any other way but public service. You are a servant leader. And the second thing he said was the worst thing that could happen would be the Iowa legislature became a full-time professional legislature, and that would take away the notion that people actually went back to their hometowns, represented their people, had jobs there, and really stayed connected to the real world. I found both of those things served me well. Finally, he said to me that anger is not a good strategy, and that something he referred to as endlessly pleasant is the thing that gets things done. And I think about that as I speak about civility these days. The term endlessly pleasant, it's very hard to argue if you remain pleasant and stick to the issue. And he's given me lots of good advice, and that's some of the best.
Let's put that off to the side for a moment. Endlessly pleasant versus anger as a political tactic.
Yes.
We'll talk about that in just a minute. A very interesting point, Mary Kramer. Let's go to our phones. We're remembering Robert Ray. He died on Sunday morning. Share your memory, 1-866-780-9100. Joe is with us in Humboldt. Joe, you have Governor Ray on your mind?
Oh, yeah. You know, a fantastic leader, and I've been a Republican and a Democrat my whole life, so, you know, I appreciate his bipartisan attitude. You know, when we were in just middle school, I think, was the time of the refugee crisis and after the Vietnam War. And you know, just to compare and contrast what we're doing today to his outreach and caring for the people affected by that war is just incredible. And I hope that you can mention that and your experts can, you know, enlighten us more on that, because that was something I had a good friend in middle school, and I still, a friend is married to one of those people. And, you know, it's a fantastic legacy of him, and I think his greatest legacy, and really made me proud to be an Iowan when I was young.
Thanks for that comment, Joe. It helps me mention tomorrow we're going to, in honor of Bob Ray, we're going to listen back to a discussion on this program from last year that focused on this very legacy. We have to remember that after the U.S. military withdrew from Vietnam in the 1970s, many of our country's allies in Southeast Asia faced torture, death, imprisonment from the ruling communist regime at that time. Tomorrow we'll listen back to a conversation with Matthew Walsh, a professor of history at the Des Moines Area Community College, his recent book, The Good Governor. And it's all about Governor Ray's courageous stand on helping refugees find a home in Iowa. Also, Ambassador Kenneth Quinn will hear tomorrow in that archive edition to honor Governor Ray. Who can take us back to the 1970s, post-Vietnam era, and speak to the courage that it took as the governor of Iowa to welcome these refugees, to ask for these refugees?
To invite them.
To invite them. Mary Kramer.
They actually, this was long before I had anything to do with politics or Governor Ray, but the methods of our church was asked to provide mentorship for I don't know how many families now, and everybody said, yeah, we can help. And so I can remember mentoring. I can remember helping to move a sofa into an apartment for a refugee family. And I'm not saying that because I think I did a good job. I'm saying that because I think the community, I've said many times, I'll continue to say, that was a model of accepting refugees and immigrants that was so successful. I can't understand why it's not a template for what we need to do today.
Dean Borg.
Mary, what I would add, just what do you think was different about Bob Ray's leadership at that time that had Iowans, I don't think there was any objection at all to what was going on. We were airlifting people from South Vietnam and bringing them into Iowa. But subsequently, you know, that ideas, similar ideas about resettling refugees right. in Iowa didn't go over so well. What was it about Bob Ray at that time, you think, or Bob Ray in general?
One of the most important things he did was to engage the grassroots in the effort immediately. In other words, the call went out all over the state, can you help with this effort? These people need our help. And Iowans, as they often do, just responded. But before anybody got here, there was this call to say, these people need our help. How can we give it? And they mobilized churches all across the state. They mobilized lots of NGOs and that could provide service. So there was this network available, and part of it was to help find jobs. Now, that means you have to help teach English, and then you can help find jobs.
Yes.
And but, again, that was coming from the grassroots. It wasn't top-down.
Governor Ray, especially proud of this part of his work, the resettlement of refugees from Southeast Asia in Iowa, but he also had some humor. Here's a quote about that time from Governor Ray. It was saving the lives of refugees. People would say, you might not get reelected. And I would say, I can make more money if I don't get reelected. So there's no rancor. There's the humor. And
I'll tell you a little story about Governor Ray when he first took office. And a year ago, I visited him at Wesley House, and I reminded him about this, and he smiled and laughed about it at that time. But you have to understand that when Governor Ray came into office, in the governor's office, print media ruled the roost, and newspaper people. I was a broadcast journalist, so I operated with a television camera and a microphone. Well, in the governor's news conferences at that time, only print media were there. Broadcast media were also there, but we could not bring our cameras and microphones in. And under Governor Hughes and before that, the broadcast journalists were just really beginning to do things, and print media had you know the rule of the roost up to that time, and so we were trying to make some inroads. Well, I said to Charlie Lakin, who was a reporter for Channel 8 in Des Moines, Charlie, Let's bring our camera and microphones into this first news conference. Well, to make a long story short, there were four of us there, Charlie Lakin of Channel 8 and me, and we each had, and I think Pete Taylor was his cameraman. Pete Taylor went on to Iowa State University sportscaster, legendary there. And we had our cameraman and gear there. In came two print people. And it was Skip Weber of the Iowa Daily Press Association and Drake Mayberry of the Des Moines Tribune. They went berserk. Governor Ray walked in and sat down, and they said, Governor, broadcast media are not allowed to have cameras and microphones in the governor's news conference. Mm-hmm. Well, who said so? And we tried to make our case. We were fighting back and forth in front of the governor, and Governor Ray sat there just... Here's his first news conference. He didn't know what to do. And finally, one of us broadcast said, we'll settle this elsewhere, Governor Ray. We don't need to do this in front of you. But for a while, we presented him with his first crisis.
Amazing. What a moment. Remembered from, I assume, 1969, Dean Borg.
Yes.
Well, we have a couple minutes before we go to break. Congressman Nagel and Lightfoot, did you have anything to add as we wrap up this little conversation honoring Bob Ray? Congressman Lightfoot, any final words? And we'll come back and talk about civility or the lack of it in our current political culture.
Well, he left a great legacy for Iowa. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. And as I mentioned earlier, he was always a gentleman about the things that he did. And there was, I don't know, it was just kind of an aura of presence about him that you don't find in a lot of people.
Congressman
Nagel?
I'll pass. I think it's been well said.
Okay, very good. Any other words, Mary Kramer, to leave us with?
I was, a quick story, I was in a receiving line with him, and, you know, governors always had the number one on their license plate, and a gentleman came through and shook hands and said to the governor, that's a great license plate. How long did you have to wait in line to get that one?
All right, many stories. Being shared about a beloved governor who passed on Sunday. We have to go to break, Dean, but very quickly.
Very quickly. You know, he survived an airplane crash up around Mason City, Clear Lake. We haven't talked about that, and there's no time to do it now, but maybe on the other side.
Okay, we'll take a break, and we'll come back. Dean Borg with us, of course, IPR correspondent, former Congressman Jim Lightfoot and Dave Nagel, Ambassador Mary Kramer with us on this edition of River to River. And when we come back, we'll talk perhaps a little bit more about Governor Ray, but also about how our country finds itself in a particularly rancorous political moment, partisan name-calling, insults. We want to talk about what this breakdown of civility is doing in our political culture, is doing to it, and if there's any remedy. And we'll get our guests' thoughts on that. Perhaps you'd like to join our discussion. 1-866-780-9100, the breakdown of civility in our culture and politics. I'm Ben Kiefer, back with more River to River in just a moment.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
And we're back with more River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. A reminder that tomorrow on this program, in honor of Bob Ray, who passed yesterday morning, Sunday morning, we'll listen back to a discussion from last year that focused on one of his lasting legacies. We've talked about it in the first half hour. Matthew Walsh is a professor of history at DMAC, Des Moines Area Community College, and author of the book, The Good Governor. A conversation with him tomorrow about former Iowa Governor Ray's courageous stand on helping refugees from Southeast Asia find a home here in Iowa. Also, Ambassador Kenneth Quinn on that program. Tune in tomorrow. And we are mourning and honoring the legacy of Robert Ray with two congressmen, two former U.S. congressmen who have served Iowa, Jim Lightfoot and Dave Nagel. Also, Ambassador Mary Kramer, former state Senate President and Ambassador to Barbados and the Eastern Caribbean. Dean Borg, also with us, Iowa Public Radio correspondent, decades long, a correspondent and journalist here in Iowa. We wanted to finish up our conversation about Bob Ray. Dean, I wanted to ask you before we move on to talk a little bit more about civility. You mentioned a plane crash that Robert Ray was involved in.
I don't remember all of the details, and I don't have means to look it up right now, but that was, as I recall, and maybe Mary or Dave or Jim remember more of the details. I do recall it was in the Mason City, Clear Lake area, and I think he was campaigning at the time. A small plane went down, and I know that he was injured because he took some time off from campaigning at that time, and I don't know any of the other details. I just know that it occurred, and it was fortunate to have survived.
Can I help here?
Yes.
Sure.
Yeah, he broke his leg, and he suffered broken leg, a significant broken leg. It was during the Republican primary. Memory doesn't allow me to remember who he was running against for the nomination, but he just, partially because of the plane wreck, the publicity generated gave him I think helped him in his primary challenge, although I think he was expected to win anyway. But I did encounter him once when he was, I don't know why I did, when he was either entering or leaving his physician's office for treatment of that leg. It was a significant injury. And you're right, he did have to take some time off.
It's an interesting coincidence that we had planned to talk about civility the whole hour this hour. What better person to represent civility and intelligent political discourse than Bob Ray? Let's talk a little bit about that. Civility is such a buzzword thrown around a lot these days. Mary, perhaps, since you talk on this quite a bit, what do we mean by civility?
Well, to me, we mean that we have the capacity to listen to this person sharing their thoughts and to process that without immediately demonizing them. And I'm a big believer in passion over issues. I don't have any problem with that. I do, though, have a problem when we start immediately thinking and describing the other person as immoral because they don't agree with us. We forget in this country we all have the capacity to have opinions and share them, and we have to respect one another for the opinions we have, and we lose that.
Mm-hmm.
We lose that.
Dave Nagel, you were a congressman in the late 80s into the early 90s. You must have seen this changing even at that time. What are your reflections as we pause and reflect on where we are now in our incivility in politics?
Well, no question it was. And it, you know, it started in the House, probably 88. But I think what generates it now today is are different factors than maybe what started it. I think one of the things is that the political campaigns in Iowa for the legislature and for Kentucky or Louisiana have almost been nationalized. Well, they have been nationalized. The RNC comes in and the DNC comes in. And those are two very partisan organizations, and I think they set the tone. I think the fundraising sources for both parties come from the people who have the strongest political feelings, and those fundraising organizations fund candidates that they find that stick to their adherence. I don't think Bob Ray could get nominated today.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's a reasonable man, and so I think where the source of money, the nationalization of even state house races, have contributed to it. Certainly, the tone of the president, and I don't want to be partisan today, but the tone of the president and the tone of the president's critics is deplorable on both sides. And finally, I think going with what Mary said earlier, I think if we would start arguing the merits of the issue,
yes,
rather than the personalities of the proponent, I think we could make a rather quick and immediate retreat from this. I don't know if it's going to happen, but that's the best way, is to argue the merits of controversy, not the personality of the proponents.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned Donald Trump here. Let's listen to a little bit of now President Donald Trump, then candidate Trump, at a campaign rally in 2016, reacting to a protester in the crowd.
Honestly, I hate to see that. Here's a guy throwing punches, nasty as hell, screaming at everything else when we're talking. And he's walking out, and we're not allowed, you know, the guards are very gentle with him. He's walking out like big high fives, smiling, laughing, like to punch him in the face, I'll tell you.
Jim Lightfoot, react to that. I guess the question here would be, is Donald Trump a symptom or a cause of incivility in our politics?
No, I think he's, I think he's just a personality that, if he wasn't in politics, would be wearing on a lot of people. He's a bit coarser than anybody that we've ever had. He's never been in politics. He doesn't have the political background that is needed, I think, in terms of working things out. Dave and I were opposite parties, but we worked together on a lot of stuff in Congress. And I've told a story on, I think, this show before about the Avenue of the Saints. Wasn't even in my district, but it was an Iowa project, and Dave was pushing it, and I was in a position to help, and we did. It goes back to, again, this thing of putting the issue ahead of personalities first, and with a personality like Mr. Trump has, it's pretty easy to jump on his personality before you talk about the issues.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think the way you get back to it is what Mary said earlier, and what Bob Ray believed in, that you leave politics out of the decision-making process, and you'll get things done.
Incivility and anger. I think, Mary Kramer, you mentioned this before. You know, anger, not the way. But let me read from a Wall Street Journal article that asked the question, does incivility work as a political strategy? If Trump's petty and vindictive, he's petty and vindictive to people whom his base hates, and many of them are perfectly fine with that, at a minimum. It's not the sort of civility that people expect from Washington, but that's exactly what many of his supporters wanted. They wanted incivility and embrace it. So this is something that the supporters of Donald Trump have embraced. He tapped into something very strong there, Mary, that people really feel you have to disrupt Washington, you have to blow it up, and this is the only way you could do it.
I guess I'm going to go back to a piece that I like to refer to a lot, which is, because people are not engaged in primaries, the most radical 2% of each party make the decision of who's on the ballot. And so I think it's a big mistake to assume that followers or supporters want civility or incivility. I think it was clear that people wanted change. And if, I guess they were willing to sacrifice that a lot to get it. And so, but, you know, lots of times when I ask people, everybody who would like to have a none of the above on the ballot, raise your hand. And it's amazing, almost the whole room hands go up, and it's, I have to say, then it's your own fault, because why would people step up and run for office these days? What's the prize if you don't believe in public service? And so I guess I think the fact that we have the most radical 2% engaged in selecting candidates leads us to this fractious partisanship that causes us to stop listening. And I guess I also want to know, who's the leader that's going to step up and help to change that? Who has the courage to change that? Who's the Bob Ray person that says, fixing this is more important than my getting reelected.
Do you see this as sort of an aberration or a pendulum, perhaps, Mary? It sounds like you may, that in reaction to this moment of sort of incivility, divisive politics, we may be swinging back, be lured, have a great appeal for a candidate who shows restraint and civility.
One can hope that, and I'm beginning to think that is true, is that the people who have a little softer spoken approach and who seem to be effective at getting things done appear now to be the stronger leaders for us. So I'm an optimistic person, so I'm encouraged that there's this willingness to discuss issues versus personalities is becoming a better and a more likely to win strategy for the future.
Dean Borg, having covered the political landscape in Iowa and elsewhere for more than five decades, your thoughts on our civility?
Well, what Mary has just said, I think, is correct, and that is, I think there is a growing thirst for reasonable leadership. Leadership that is, I know that the extremes on either side don't want compromise and aren't willing to compromise, but I believe that there is a thirst, as I said, for reasonable leadership. We've used that word leadership a lot, and I believe that the example is set at the top, and it's deplorable when the example that is set is one of bashing and personal attacks. And I know that you have other things that you want to get to, but I think that the media has a role here, and I'd like to comment on that.
Please do.
At some point. Well, I think that journalists have a very delicate decision in how they cover and what they report. And it's one that requires well-educated journalists and equally well-educated and experienced assignment editors and editors. They've got to be fair and accurate, but they also have to be what I would say discerning and comprehensive in what they do. And there's a saying in television news, if it bleeds, it leads, which means sensational things get a lot of coverage. Mm-hmm. And I think that reporters have to be very careful in what they're doing so they don't give a bullhorn to a cricket.
Mm. But it is also an age of social media, Dean,
yes.
Much different than when you were a younger journalist.
Yes.
An age in which you can get your news from any source you like, even if it's your Twitter or your Facebook.
Yes, and that is a dilemma, and it's something that is very concerning, I think, to journalists, bona fide journalists.
Let me play another clip. Yes, who is this?
I just going
to
say.
Can I add to that, which is it seems to me sometimes the need to be first overwhelms the need to be right or correct.
Mm.
And I guess in the days of 24/7 news coverage, sometimes these things, it is more competitive than it is accurate.
Well, I'll add one more thing to what you're saying, Mary. The number of journalists and news media employing qualified journalists, the journalists have been decreasing, newspapers cutting back their staff, broadcasters as well. But the number employed by special interest groups to orchestrate information and choreograph so-called news events is dramatically increasing.
Congressman, you wanted to jump in there?
Yeah, I was going to say one other thing you can throw in with the social media, which has changed the complexion, I think, of a lot of the people in that you read some of the stuff that's on there, and it's you know, it's bone-chilling that people would say the things that they do, but they can do it somewhat anonymously, so they're brave, and, you know, it's easy to bash somebody when you're not looking them in the eye. But the other element in this whole thing, I think, is the cable news systems, and I use news between quotes rather easily, because some of those programs that you see where people are four or five people on the panel and all they do is scream and talk over each other, they're firing this whole lack of civility as well. And at the risk of sounding like I'm somebody my age, a lot of this starts at home. We've got a generation or two of young people now who would never open a door for a lady, would never walk on the outside going down the street. I doubt if any of the four of us you're talking to today have any tattoos anywhere. At least I've never seen all of us in swimming suits, so I don't know. But guessing that two of us were born in the 30s and two were born in the 40s, that we probably aren't in that category unless there's something from the military.
Well, I think, Jim, what you're saying is that it is a societal problem, and I fully agree with that. But I would just also say that, you know, and this is a, I'm going back to responsibility of journalists again here in shaping public opinion and reporting news, bona fide news. Journalists, I don't think some of us did not serve the nation well during the last presidential election. I'm going back to some of the debates, for example. The questions seem more intended to ignite personal attacks than to enlighten people on national priorities that we would be using in evaluating presidential candidates.
Mary Kramer, I wanted to, as we wind up this conversation, from you, all of you, what is the way forward, Mary Kramer? You speak about civility. What can individuals do? Dean has addressed the problem of the media, the contribution of the media. What can we as consumers of the media, as people in our family gatherings, our friends and acquaintances do to encourage civility? Hefty discussion about politics or whatever, but civility.
Well, I think it's, you know, there's lots of people around saying, well, we just don't talk about politics or religion in our family or at our groups or any of that. And I just find that to be worsening the situation, because there's clear research that shows if you only listen and talk to people that share your worldview, you become more entrenched in that worldview. So it's really important that we begin to get more comfortable talking to one another about issues and difficult things so that we can move ahead. I really believe, though, the first step is that we listen carefully, that we don't allow ourselves to interrupt or give advice or try to influence until we understand the other person's position. And that requires quite a bit of discipline, but I think it's the way forward.
Mm. Listening, a good tip there. Jim Lightfoot, jump in here as we finish up this program. What is your advice on the way forward that's productive?
I've always believed that the best way to lead is by example. And I think that each of us has a responsibility to set a good example for these young people that I think have gotten off the railroad track, and for our peers as well. Be civil in what you do, how you treat people, and if enough of us will do it, it'll start to catch hold. Otherwise, I'm afraid that we're headed for rougher times.
Dave Nagel, do you think we're headed for rougher times?
Well, the first thing I'd say is, the great thing about democracy, and I spent a considerable amount of time in the Soviet Union when I was in office and afterwards, and no one there could voice a protest to the course of the government's conduct. Dissent wasn't permitted. Alternative views weren't expressed. The great thing about a democracy is we always have the capacity to change and correct mistakes. It isn't so much we get it right the first time, it's that we can adjust our attitudes. I'm reminded so much of the 1938-39 era with the American Nazi Party, with Lindbergh and the desire to keep America in an isolationistic stance, and how bitter and strong feeling those times were. Congress enacted the draft, the House by one vote, just prior to the outbreak of World War II. We go through these times of great dissension and strong feeling, and we sort through them. And as long as we have we have that fundamental tool of democracy, the right to alter course when we find conduct inappropriate, I think we can get through this. So I'm optimistic for the future, but I'm very, very, very tired of the present.
Okay, we'll leave it at that. Nice words to end our discussion on civility and incivility. Dave Nagel, Congressman Nagel, Congressman Jim Lightfoot, Ambassador Mary Kramer, and Dean Borg of Iowa Public Radio. Thank you so much for your thoughts on Robert Ray and also on our discussion on civility.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks.
Thank you, Ben.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Dean?
Tune in tomorrow. We'll honor Bob Ray with a rebroadcast looking at one of his most lasting, important legacies, the welcoming of refugees from East Asia to find a home here in Iowa. That's tomorrow on an archive edition of River to River, produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Caitlin Harrop. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.